Last Thursday in our nation's capital, a diverse group of faith leaders and supporters marched to the White House, the culmination of a series of actions that began back in May 1st. Actions designed to spur President Obama to stop the record level of deportations his administration has been executing and to raise awareness of the moral and justice components of this important issue. Leading the procession, as well as a faith service, and presenting a petition signed by more than 4,000 people of faith was Bishop Minerva Carcano, official spokesperson on immigration for the United Methodist Church. And we are very fortunate to have Bishop Carcano with us on State of Belief Radio today. Bishop, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you.
It's an ecumenical group that you've been working with and that marched to the White House this week. Would you start by talking about who's participating in terms of faith traditions and backgrounds and how this movement came together? And I have an idea that you're a driving force behind it.
Well, we've had about 100 leaders, immigrant leaders, from all across the country, Catholic, evangelical, Protestant, those who are between faith as well, mm-hmm. because of the impact of this kind of journey and because of where they find themselves in the shadows of society, not yet quite integrated. So it was a diverse group in terms of faith perspective. It was a group that represents the best leadership from among our immigrant community. Many of them were persons who are undocumented, some of them with ankle monitors, and so they're at a very precarious place in their journey, and others who have not yet been detected but were willing to come forth, even if this meant that somebody would recognize them and detain them because they feel the urgency of the moment to give a witness, not only to Congress, not only to President Obama, but to this country, about the fact that they represent a community of hardworking people, people of faith, people who want to make a contribution, and yet people who are living in the shadows and living under great fear, and they're experiencing greater and greater persecution and racism as well.
Bishop Carcano, how did you get them here? Who did the organizing?
A number of different organizations of immigrant rights groups, immigrant labor groups, so groups that are very active across the country, primarily under the leadership of Endelon, who does a lot of organizing with immigrant populations and immigrant worker rights groups. There is a growing coalition and network of those who stand with immigrants from the faith perspective, from the employment labor perspective and organizing perspective. Communities of immigrants are arising and saying enough. And the network that is being created will make a change and is making a change in this country.
Thursday was the closing of the rolling fast to call for change in how immigration policies are implemented. I'd like for you to talk about the origins of the fast on May 1st and how that worked and the tradition of nonviolent action that connects you to all of this.
Well, the fast is based on the fact that this is a movement of people of deep faith, people who know that when we fast before God, God hears our prayers. When we fast, it gives us an opportunity to put our lives into perspective. We quit paying attention to our carnal human needs in order to pay attention to something greater. And so immigrants and people who stand with them made the decision to take a break from those normal things we do to create space for reaching out to God, reaching out to others, paying attention to this critical moment in history and deciding how we're going to lead this country and our communities as well around immigration.
Has it worked for the people? I mean, do they feel empowered by this?
I saw it. I really saw it. And one of the pieces of empowerment was immigrant voices, immigrant men and women. A 13-year-old, Catherine Figueroa from Maricopa County in Arizona, a woman named Sandra, a young man from Vermont. Sandra's from Atlanta, young man from Vermont, young adult, all of whom said to me, if you had said to me a year ago that I would be speaking in Washington, D.C., I would have said there is not a single possibility. Mm-hmm. But the fast has empowered them, has given them strength to come forth, knowing that there's a whole national community fasting and praying has given them strength.
Mm. What specific changes are you asking for, and where does the impetus of that come from, specifically in terms of your faith?
It's a campaign around not one more. Not one more person immigrant deported, not one more family torn apart because of a deportation or a detention, and not one more person affected because they've reported a crime and therefore have been detained by immigration or questioned or harassed. And so that's been the focus, to ask the president primarily to use his administrative power to detain the deportations. We've had more deportations under President Obama than any other president that we are aware of. 12 million people, 1,200 immigrants are deported every day in this country. That's 1,200 families. That's 1,200 congregations. That's 1,200 neighborhoods and communities that are being affected. 1,200 jobs that are being affected as well. We're all affected when an immigrant is deported. So to stop that deportation, that harassment, that detention, indefinite in some case, detention of immigrants, is critical, not only for the immigrant or their immediate families, it affects all of us, mm-hmm. all of us.
Yeah. Bishop Carcano, earlier this summer, there was a lot of attention focused on the Senate Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, and of course now that matter is before the House. How does the work of the legislature relate to the actions that you're demanding from the executive branch of government?
I'm not sure, because I don't know all the political dimensions of that. What I do know is that the president has certain executive administrative powers. I've been at table with President Obama. I've been at table even more so with his staff focused on immigration. And what they argue is that the president is the enforcer of the law and therefore had a need to enforce the law. I appreciate that he is the enforcer of the law. But he also has administrative power in this circumstance to ask Homeland Security to stop the deportations while Congress makes a decision around humane, just, and I would want to add sane, sane immigration reform.
Have you seen anything that makes you think there might be a change of mind in the White House, or that there might be some leniency in which there's a cutback on deportations?
I'm not privy to that kind of internal conversation, but one note that continues to give me hope is the fact that a year ago, the president did take an action, an executive administrative action, to side with young immigrants, mm-hmm. with the Dreamers, and to say, we're going to allow them to stay. They are the future for their families, but also for this country, and we are living in a broken immigration system. So let's be the compassionate, just-filled country that we have a history of being, mm-hmm. and let's side with them. That continues to give me hope.
And I guess, I'm pushing on this because I know it has to impact the way you do your work as well as the way you strategize about the future. But do you feel any of that compassion when you're in the White House?
I do. I do feel that compassion. I also feel a great concern around politics, the state of politics. And the state of politics is that there are congressional leaders who, if they see the president getting, in their opinion, too engaged, they shut the door, just because it's the president, mm-hmm. just because it happens to be Barack Obama. And that is not a helpful way to lead this country
right.
at all. And so it's a stalemate situation. And this, among many other issues, are too critical to be dependent on these political games.
A lot of people are being hurt
yes.
by that stalemate.
Yes, exactly. We're stuck on health care. We're stuck on immigration reform, on the economy, and the list goes on.
You published a very moving article in Huffington Post this week, headlined Immigration, It's About Families. Talk a little more about that, if you will.
I woke up one night unable to sleep because of what I see happening around immigration reform in this country and wrote that article out of a need to just deal with the feelings I was having. I think they're feelings that many people in this country share. And that is the way that we have forgotten that this is about families. Immigration reform is about families. It's not about numbers. It's about families. It's about little children and young people, men and women who are here undergirding our economy, here because we've had some impact on their own economies from the countries they come from,
mm-hmm.
the impact of NAFTA and CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned about them. I'm concerned about the militarization of the border. $46 billion to secure a border. When those border communities, and I have now served the whole extent of the border, and I have never been in a community that wanted those walls,
mm-hmm.
and on either side. And so $46 billion, that is sinful. That is sinful. What message do we send to the world, not just to Mexico, but to the world? What message do we give our children here, that we secure the world by a wall, that we need to separate ourselves out from other people? It's the wrong message. It's the wrong investment of incredible resources. $46 billion could transform the economic situation of North and South America
mm-hmm.
if we chose to make that investment, and would do more to right this situation of immigration than anything else.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things led me to write that article.
Well, in the article, you wrote, these are immigrant men and women, children and young people who not only deserve better, but whose struggle will bring judgment upon this country for decades to come if we don't begin to treat them justly. Now, I know you want to stop deportations. What else is needed for this to comply as a justice-laced movement from the side of government?
If it were a just movement, it would be comprehensive, truly comprehensive immigration reform that would take into consideration how economic agreements in the region and globally have affected migration that comes into this country. I've mentioned NAFTA and CAFTA as two examples of that. NAFTA, one clear example, 2 million farmers were left destitute in Mexico because of the impact of NAFTA. So that kind of economic examination and correction is necessary. A pathway to citizenship for those immigrants who are already here. Those immigrants are here serving in this country. They've come here. They've contributed to the economy. They've contributed to our way of life. And they need to be recognized. If we set up a second class of citizenship, it begins to erode not only our families and our communities, but our democracy as well. The labor rights of persons need to be respected, need to be protected for any worker, be they documented or undocumented. Because again, if we don't respect the rights of workers, then we erode the rights of all workers. Those are some of the basic things. The reunification of families. We have many, many immigrant families. We have families where half of the family is documented and half is not. A mother, a father documented children who are not, or vice versa. And yet they're separated because of our broken immigration policy. that needs to be corrected.
I tell you what, I listening to you, I don't see how they say no to you. You're very persuasive. So what's next in this? What comes after you go home this time?
We continue to pray, we continue to fast, and we continue to hold up the voice for justice. That's the role of communities of faith. As a Christian, Scripture is full of wonderful, wonderful examples of how we are to treat the immigrant. And we need to live that and not just preach that. And so to continue to speak to Congress, continue to speak to the president, continue to speak to local city officials and county sheriffs like Joseph Arpaio and governors so that justice is done for our immigrant families. I'm concerned that the House of Representatives is stuck. I'm concerned that the bill that came out of the Senate was not the best effort in terms of the justice and moral dimensions of what we need to do to right the situation with our immigrant brothers and sisters. So we need to persist. The journey may be long, but we need to persist in all those ways.
You know, you have all of the information in your head. But what's most moving is what's in your heart. And it's perfectly obvious in talking to you that the power that's there. What has doing all of this done to you?
I believe deeply that it's made me a better person, a better daughter of God, a better servant of Christ as a Christian. I think it's opened my heart in a way that has made sense of life in a much deeper way and clearer way. This past week, I walked with a woman who was detained in the eighth month of her pregnancy and wears today an ankle monitor and has today a one-month-old daughter. And she walked with her daughter, little, tiny, precious, beautiful girl named Evelyn. And I could not but feel like Evelyn was my daughter as well. And I want a better world for Evelyn and all the children that I've met along the way, immigrant children who have touched my life deeply, and immigrant brothers and sisters who have welcomed me in not only their homes, but into their families, and shown me the face of God in a way that I had not yet seen. And so I feel like I'm a better person and have more hope for the world because of the witness, that incarnational witness that immigrants have given to me.
I'm not a cynic. I'm a hopeful person. But yet I have to be realistic and say that this Congress has said no so many times or just has not done anything. You may be disappointed. This is not a counseling session, but if you are, please don't stop.
Oh, thank you. And I won't stop, and I don't stop, because while I may be disappointed with Congress, I'm never disappointed with God. And I see God at work, and God has the last word.
Yeah. Bishop Minerva Carcano is the first Hispanic woman elected to the Episcopacy of the United Methodist Church. Today, she serves as Bishop of Los Angeles and is the denomination's official spokesperson on immigration. Wise Methodists. Bishop Carcano, I know it's been an extraordinarily busy week for you, and I am so grateful that you took time to come to our studio and to be on State of Belief Radio to enlighten and inspire our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's my privilege. God bless.